gets burned, and all the scum floats to the top.
I think more direct democracy would be good, but I think that the point I was making was that Hernandez, who has never been a great friend of the homeless in spite of his homespun demeanor, he has said that at the council meetings, he actually got the city council to pass a resolution that said they would look into actually acquiring buildings and places for people to park and sleep their vehicles and that sort of thing. And that, of course, has not been done at all, even though I reminded the city manager about that. We have an incoming call here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi. I'm sort of listening to the radio in spite of the loud world round about me. And I thought I heard this update on de Tocqueville, or else someone was talking about my cooking.
Have you been smoking that funny green stuff?
No,
collar?
I wish. It's superior to the pharmaceutical cartel. But
by the way, I want to make an announcement, caller, in case you didn't know that today is the birthday of a famous homeless activist in Santa Cruz and video journalist, Becky Johnson. And people should send her donations of cash, money, and chocolate cake immediately. That's my suggestion. A fine activist. In fact, why blather around? You yourself, caller, I recognize your voice. You're Linda LeMaster, the infamous head
you
of...
You would say that after I confess, yeah. As a melting pot cook.
You're head of the Homeless Icky Task Force.
No, I'm not. It doesn't exist. I once was.
Yes. Actually, that task force, which I so demeaned... Did some good things, came out with a good report, and we're wondering when you're going to hold your press conference to demand the city council.
We are going to keep wondering.
Yeah, I guess so.
If I hold my press conference, it would probably be on behalf of Housing Now in Santa Cruz.
There you go.
And not some imagined and dead city advising body.
Well, I think that the advising body came up with
a good
document.
But it might have some opinions about the city's advising bodies.
Yeah, well, you know, we have about 18 minutes left in the show, and I was going to play a few more homeless interviews, but you've been homeless yourself. Anything you want to comment on before we unceremoniously give you the bum's rush?
About being homeless? Yes, okay. If you're going to cut me off anyway, I'll think of something to say.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm kidding. I really appreciated the little excerpts you were playing from something you went to that you should have told me about before you went, where people from other cities were talking about how populations like the frail elderly who were housed and within the incomes they had, even when it's a joke like GA or Social Security pensions, who are being flushed now out into the streets in mass across the country, especially here for some reason in California.
Mm-hmm. So are you going to be going to this February 27th city council meeting where we had heard there were going to be great things? Ed Porter was going to put the sleeping ban on the agenda.
Oh.
Then we heard that Ed was running the other way as fast as his educated legs could carry him, and then we heard that people were going to go anyway and still try to speak up about the sleeping ban. Have you heard
rumors?
Rumors
I hope
are flying,
Ed's
man.
Feet aren't silly by now.
And then there's that Green Party we've heard so much about, the
one
that has the homeless, working, or worthless
group.
What is it called?
Something or two about that. But let me get your first question first.
Sure.
I plan to be there, but not so much because of this other autonomous group, but because of the slumlord situation at 204 Riverside Avenue,
mm-hmm.
The organizers with those tenants are asking for lots of support.
I'm wondering what exactly they want.
I guess they just have this very, seeing the trees but not the forest part of trying to keep tenants from getting evicted.
Right, and we see.
My view is if there were enough people. If there were more of us than there were tenants, perhaps we could just seize the building and change the game board a little.
Mm-hmm. Well, you and Terry Messman and the Oakland Union of the Homeless, they used to do that up then.
I'd need more than one buddy to do that.
Right. Well, I'm always happy for the Riverside, 204 Riverside people to be heard. As I said earlier, I think it's a shameful way they're being used by the city council rather than the problems being addressed.
How do you mean?
The problem being addressed citywide around rent control. That's what I think really should be done. Instead, this is the building the city council could have bought a year ago or 2 years ago instead of the Dolphin Lee, being...
Well, they could close it down and pay less for it now. Why don't they? If
they have no backbone.
Oh, the usual, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Spineless jellyfish masquerading as strong politicians. Anything else, Linda, before we hook you out here?
Didn't you have a second question?
Yeah, well, the second question was about the Greens, the group from which Tim Fitzmaurice came, from whose loins gave us Emperor Tim.
Oh, my God, I don't think so.
Yes.
Sorry to break the news.
It's more like a hair follicle in my view.
Hey, listen, Tim is the pride and joy of the Green Party. Ask Arnie Leff.
Ingrown hair.
Or David Espinosa.
I don't want to come off sounding like I'm as disgusted as you are with the current mayor, Robert. But,
but I
don't think the party spawned him, believe me.
Well,
I think
they
he must have gone
him.
To Catholic school or
they
something.
They supported Ed Porter. What are they doing now, guy? I mean, I heard that there was some homeless working group, but yet I haven't yet heard of a meeting time and place. Now, what's going on?
There's a
that?
Meeting Sunday, and the place is a person's home. I don't know if it's okay to say where, but I heard where.
It's open to the public,
I'll find
supposedly.
Out. And the time has not been set.
Oh, I see.
But
well,
we could
wait around from
today.
Midnight to midnight, I guess.
Yeah, like your court for James Nay.
Right. Well, I would say I keep waiting, hoping that our fine producer will give us the news on that one. If people do want the information on James Nay, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. He is going to trial tomorrow. I suspect 1:30 is the earliest he can be tried. So if you want to be for sure, come at 1:30.
Yeah.
But also just call 423-HUFF for that information.
And unlike the municipal superior and fictional magistrate courts, they don't change it as they go along. If they ever do pick a time and place, the Greens should show up there.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess
well, I
people
like,
who might want to go who you know, are in the party could call me if they
I'm
want.
I'm just real tired of the Greens running off to these meetings. Why don't they just go directly to City Council and tell Mayor Fitzmaurice to either act according to the Green Party, or they're simply repudiating him. Individually, each member says, I repudiate you. Goodbye.
Robert, that's not an original thought. I think
no,
you stole
I
that
don't
from
be,
Scott Graham.
It's a good idea.
I've heard that before.
It's a good idea.
Yes, and yeah. I will promote that if they do have a meeting and if I can get to it.
No, we don't have. Why
they march to Tim's house or whatever.
Sure, don't march to Tim's house. March to the city council meeting and say, Fitzmaurice, you don't represent the Green Party. Get the fuck out of office or do something meaningful on these issues.
Oh,
don't
so
pretend
now,
you're a Green.
Now we finally have enough new baby Green Party members to have a party, and you want us to go down there and piss off the staff so we
get enjoined
like
you did? That comes
with
the territory. Unless you're yellow. Are you yellow or are you green? I guess that's going to be the flyer. Are you yellow or are you green?
I like it.
Thank
yeah,
you
get
very
it
much.
Out. Yeah.
Thanks, Lily. Keep us advised. And I've got to run on you, but thank you for calling in.
You got some good tapes going today. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm going to get back to those tapes because I really do want to play a little of this stuff before we get run out by Uncle Dennis, who should be loping in here any minute in his usual 15 minutes in advance, clearing the terrain, spoiling.
He's quite the interloper.
He is indeed. So stay with us for a little bit more from the Homeless Services Center and the life on the streets.
So it's February 12th. 2001. This is the 5:30 Citizens Advisory Board meeting. Looks like.
Actually, you're being fooled by this tape. It is not the Citizens Advisory Board.
Jenny, Bob.
It is a much better tape. It's a tape actually of a guy who has quite a story to tell, but unfortunately, it's not properly queued up. So as usual, Scott Graham. I have to blame him because he's wearing the wrong kind of shoes, and that's distracted me. This is Bathroom Spears Broadsides you're listening to. I came in with 11 pages off the internet, and I haven't read one yet, so I'm going to give you a little something. There was a couple of guys who were detained for allegedly having explosive materials behind the Capitola Police Station. Remember that, Scott?
Right. And originally it was portrayed in the paper that they were going to go downtown and throw Molotov cocktails at the Dakota Club. But what came out later was that they were actually going to go throw the Molotov cocktails at the Dakota Club's next-door neighbor, The Gap.
Oh. So, I don't know if it's been shown, because the claim here is, this is a letter. Greetings, friends and supporters. On Thursday, February 15th, at our detention hearing, both Peter and myself were granted bail. I was released that night on a $50,000 equity bond under supervision of my folks. For Peter, it is a matter of paper shuffling for a few days until he gets released on a $100,000 equity bond and placed under house arrest at his folks' place. I wish to express much thanks for the intrinsic support we received during our three-week incarceration. Our spirits remain wild and free, and thanks to the letters, our chins were up there as well. We have a long legal road ahead of us and are facing the maximum 10 years in federal prison. Now that I'm out, my first priority is to raise funds for lawyers and miscellaneous fees. If you have any ideas while I'm brainstorming, please email me at railpirate@apexmail.com, and we'll keep in touch. And so forth. And then there's a little story below. Federal charges filed against Santa Cruz 2, February 10th. Federal charges have now been filed against Matt White and P.D. Schnell. They are facing a maximum of 20 years in prison. Note, this is the maximum sentence, not what they're likely to get if convicted, but it does serve as an indicator of the seriousness of the charges for allegedly having possessed materials, gas, gallon jugs, and birthday candles, which could be made into, quote, destructive devices. The U.S. Attorney's Office is currently requesting that Matt and P.D. be held without bail. Apparently they were released on bail. One has to wonder if the people who did not have records as activists would be facing such serious federal charges for simply having a gas can, some empty jugs, and birthday candles in their car. A review of the, quote, photo evidence photos is particularly interesting as it includes a tropical source chocolate bar wrapper, a flyer to an upcoming event exposing the prison industrial complex, a map of Santa Cruz, and other such incriminating evidence. In order to fight these outlandish charges and provide adequate support for these two young men, we need to raise around $30,000. Some will come from the families of the two, but we desperately need your assistance as well. Checks can be made out to the Santa Cruz 2 Defense Fund and mailed to P.O. Box 917, Santa Cruz, California, 95006. And they've been transferred, apparently, to prisons in San Jose, but they've also been released. So that's a little update on the Santa Cruz 2. Here's a little something that you might appreciate, Scott. It's a story from Maine.
All right.
Your home state here. And I'm going to read you this. We're probably not going to have time to get through this because it's very long, and we're sure we'll be cut off, but I'll read some of it. Out in the Cold by Jeff Turtle, Saturday, February 17th. The large snowdrops dropping outside Bangor's public library on this day come as a welcome sight to
That's
one...
That's Bangor.
Thank you. It's good to have a Maine man here. The Bangor Public Library on this day come as a welcome sight to one tired homeless man there. That means it's not as cold as it could be, said the almost thankful 43-year-old, as darkness, too, begins to fall on the downtown streets he has called home for the nearly 3 years. The man who did not want to be identified is among the estimated 1,000 to 1,200 homeless people each night in the state, where officials are joining national crusade to end the growing trend within 10 years. Toward that end, members of the Maine Coalition for the Homeless will arrive at the State House in Augusta on Tuesday after earlier this month launching a petition drive to gather 50,000 signatures by April in support of a plan to end homelessness in the state by 2006. We believe that it's unacceptable that human beings have to be homeless and that Maine is able to address and correct the problems, said Brother Francis Bluen, vice president of the Portland-based coalition. Not just wishful thinking, Bluen insists. The proposal outlines a number of specific steps, the first of which is support of a bill submitted to the legislature this session, which will put a $20 million bond issue on next November's ballot to provide more low-income housing. The shortage of affordable housing has plagued Maine's major cities in recent months, and the money is expected to add between 275 and 300 much-needed units statewide, Bluen said. But more housing probably won't matter much to the man in the library. On a recent January afternoon, he reads the Boston Globe in his regular spot downstairs amid the popular fiction, quietly telling his story while a few curious library patrons occasionally throw a glance his way as they walk up and down the aisles. The previous night, he slept for only 2 hours on the ground in a downtown alleyway as temperatures dropped well below zero and his multiple layers of clothing failed to keep out the whipping winds. The rest of the night, he shuffled around the city in his worn tennis shoes, trying to keep warm, looking in the garbage for clothing, especially boots, and empty cans and bottles, his only source of income. "Sitting here, I'm still cold," said the man, who, even though in the relative warmth of the library, is still clad in two winter hats, two pairs of pants, a turtleneck, a sweatshirt, and several other layers. "Sometimes I feel disheartened that I don't have a bare existence where everything revolves around putting food in your belly." Sounds like having a bare existence in Maine would get you frozen pretty fast. Sorry about that. Today he didn't eat and didn't expect to. Yesterday the strict vegetarian used 24 empty cans to buy a bag of generic brand puffed wheat. There was no milk to go with it. Way too extravagant, he said. Tired of accusations that he is a drain on taxpayers, he won't apply for federal or state assistance despite being diagnosed with depression, he said. He won't ask for or accept money, clothing, or food. Last winter, he wouldn't use a sleeping bag that mysteriously appeared near the rear of a downtown parking garage he was known to frequent. He won't go back to a shelter or stay in an abandoned building. He won't eat at any of the area's soup kitchens, loony bins, he calls them. At night he keeps moving. It's not pride, it's fear, said the man, who has lived outside since the ice storm of 1998, save for a few nights in area hospitals and the 18 days last January after police took him to the Bangor Mental Health Institute for a psychological evaluation. Once you're in the system or you let someone give you something, they feel like they own you and you owe them something. The shelter solution. Compared to the majority of the state's chronic homeless population, in many ways, the man in the library is a rarity. Sober, alcohol hurts his stomach, a local, a Brewer High School graduate, and a self-described full-timer who sleeps outside regardless of the weather. Those who sleep outside under bridges or in abandoned buildings are thought to make up less than 10% of the nation's homeless population. Estimated at 750,000 people, ha ha ha, it's actually five or ten times that, on any given night, according to statistics from the Washington, D.C.-based National Alliance to End Homelessness. The Alliance, which recently released its own plan to end homelessness by 2010, estimates that as many as 2 million people are without a place to live at some time during the year. In Maine, that number is between 10,000 and 12,000, according to the Maine State Housing Authority. The agency oversees the state's 39 emergency homeless shelters, which house about 600 people each night. Curtis, a 20-year-old from Winterport, was one of the 600. Until mid-November, he slept in the woods outside a friend's house in Hampton. We interrupt this story for this phone call.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Yes, I'd like to make a suggestion. Are you taking those?
Sure.
Okay. I think this would go a long way towards building goodwill towards the homeless, as well as being a very responsible thing for the homeless to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that is to pick up after themselves if they're going to be sleeping in the woods.
I think that's an excellent idea.
But I never hear you promote that. I've brought it up with you previously.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're doing it now, aren't we, due to your fine intervention.
But will you do this on your own, or is that going to be the end of it?
Will I say, please pick up after yourselves? I'll tell you what, you have my word that I will mention it at least twice in the next broadcast.
I think it would be helpful, though.
I mean,
if there was a serious... I'm not trying to be...
It's sort of
I'm not trying to make trouble, but this is serious, because I do habitat restoration in the woods, and I see a lot of trashed-out campsites,
mm-hmm.
and...
I think that's true.
You know, if you guys would pick up after yourselves, it would help a lot.
This actually was something that my associate here, Scott Graham, brought up when we were first talking 5 or 6 years ago. He was denouncing me for supporting these trashy bums in the woods who just don't pick up after themselves. And what do you think, Scott? Is this caller kind of hitting the nail on the head here?
Well, I remember when we had those discussions, Robert, you wanted me to produce a flyer to give to campers on how to be a tidy camper. I said, well, then the woods would just be littered with these flyers. And, I think it's a minority of the campers. I mean, if you consider the fact that there's over 1,000 people a night camping in the woods around the city of Santa Cruz, and you can only find a half a dozen or so trashed out sites, that means the majority of the campers are good and conscientious campers.
Well, I've found a lot more than that. And the point is, I think that if you look, if you made the point to follow up on each other, it would help.
Well, I actually know somebody...
1,000 people in the woods is a huge imposition on the wildlife that is being increasingly squeezed into those rare places that remain.
You tell them, Pat.
Well, it would be better that we pave it all over and build condos there, just like the rest of the people live in, right?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because what we really need is to have fewer kids so that the population isn't going to continue to explode.
Well,
like
I hope
that.
You have had
I was wondering when you were going to come to
are
that.
Are you living in the woods, Pat?
Have you had a vasectomy?
Did somebody ask if I had a vasectomy?
That was Scott's question.
Yeah, that's usually a good one, because that's a damned if you do, damned if you don't question.
Well, why would you be damned if you don't?
Because then I'm a hypocrite.
Oh, I see. No, I mean, why would you be damned if you do?
Because then I'm an eco-fascist who is obsessed with conservation and trying to impose these extreme population measures on everybody else.
I don't know. It would seem to me... I mean, you have a right to an opinion regardless of whether you've had a vasectomy or not, in spite of the vicious attacks of my next talk show host who I suggest you call in and thrash
your
verbally. Yes.
Don't bother, Pat. This is your radio station.
So, well, I'm to pay no heed to these voices of dissent in the background. Is there anything more you want to say before we're kind of reaching the last minute of the hour?
Yeah, I'll let you go here, but I think those points should be followed through on. I really do. So.
All right.
Take it for what you want.
Well, I promised to mention it twice, and I hope if I don't do that, you can whip me around.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Listen, that's it for Bathrob Spears Broadsides. The notorious Deadeye Dennis has arrived and is giving me a fishy look here. I've got to get my butt out of here before he and his Earth First Eagles tear out my vittles.
But anyway, about the trash in the woods, I knew a guy that lived in Poganip probably 10 or 15 years ago, and he organized a major cleanup of the woods in Poganip. They piled all the trash near the train tracks to haul it out the next morning, and him and a couple other guys that night slept near the trash pile. In the morning, Poganip was raided by the police. The police asked my friend, "Where did this trash come from?" And he said, "Oh, we collected it all and put it here." So they gave him a littering ticket. Everybody else that was out there that morning got a camping ticket, but he got a littering ticket.
And in fact, I conducted part of a major cleanup of the Pasatiempo area in 1988 as part of a do a good turn for the community deal run by a number of homeless people and Jane Immler, who was running for city council at that time. Police similarly conducted raids. The day after we did that, we hauled trash out, bag after bag of trash. And it's sort of like saying we aren't going to give black people civil rights in the ghetto until they clean up their act down there. I mean, I'm not saying you're saying that, caller. I don't think you are. But you have to be careful because it can sound that way. So I want to thank you for your call. Thank everybody for listening. Dennis, let me know when you're ready to go, and I will jump up and abandon the seat here. Next edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides will be from 11 to 1:30. In spite of the harassing activities of certain well-intended, well-educated, but extremely I don't wish to give to you know throw stones in my grass house, or is it my glass house? Anyway, I'll take my. It looks like you're ready to go, Dennis. Are we, in fact, at that point?
He's getting close.
He's got his little bottle of vodka out, I see. He's got his little M1 over there, just in case any FCC agents arrive. Just kidding, all you officers listening. We have no weaponry here, but, of course, the power
nothing
of...
Nothing but the truth. Except
nothing but
mouth.
The truth. But indeed, my mouth, one of the
That's
most...
That's not a weapon.
Well, even a mouth can be a deadly weapon, as has been said before. So I want you to wander on down, if you haven't already, to the Zoning Commission hearing at City Hall and look into the issue of the, is it a repeater station? It's some sort of an antenna device on top.
Cell phone tower.
Thank you, Dennis. And I think that's a mic.
Probably why he's so wacky.
Yeah. I learned...
Those electromagnetic rays. Not to mention the fact that we're beaming 40 watts into our brains right now.
As you can see, the show is being taken over by alien voices in the background. So I can only say thank you for being with me on this particular edition. And now I have to get lost. At least that's the view of the new the man who's taking over. Come back on Sunday from 11 to 1:30. I should have the city council agenda. And between times, you see problems with the police or you want to get in touch, 423-HUFF, 423-4833.
So is it just dead air, Robert? Is that it? It's just dead air. How about the squeaky? I'm gonna put these CDs. These are your CDs, Robert, aren't they? I don't know. It came out of CD player number 2.
Yeah,
it's not yours. That's mine.
Oh, forget it.
He just uncued my CD for me.
I'm trying to help here, Dennis.
Yeah, right. I need help. That's not the help I need, Robert. Anyway, I don't even know what this CD is. It's looks like a naked woman in a waterfall. Oh, well.